Welcome to the Vagabond House. Thank you for listening. My start in theater was like most things in my youth. It was embarrassing, it was risky, and it was foolish. But one could argue that those are also the ingredients for success in the creative and performing arts. Like most theater freaks, I started in high school. I started making movies at the age of 12. Well, look, they weren't home movies. Not the kind where you document family get-togethers and birthday parties. Now, these were full-on action flicks. We had guns, explosions, motorbikes. In the pre-Final Cut Pro days, we were editing using two VCRs, a boombox, and several sets of coaxial cables. And I somehow had the precocious notion that to direct actors, one needed to know how to act in the first place. Theater One was what you remember it to be. A motley crew of misfits, loners, prima donnas, and jocks who didn't know any better. Hippies. Tools who were looking for an easy A. And at the helm of the ship was the quintessential drama teacher, Miss B. She wore dream catcher earrings, chain smoked, had a big silver ring on her finger that you could scoop ice cream with, and she had the personality to go with it. She knew how to work with young people and help them realize their creative potential. And with such ease and a genuine sense that she not only understood you, but cared about you. Nobody, not even my parents, could coax me to deliver on that potential. Now, given this spiritual awakening, I thought it only natural to audition for the Fall One Act Festival. The previous year, my high school had won the statewide competition and was therefore invited to present a showcase production for the current festival. The requirements for the audition were simple. Pitch a concept for the one act and perform a two-minute monologue. Never mind that I had nothing prepared and I had no idea what a monologue was, I strode into that black box theater proud and ready until I surveyed the room. Noticed that the people in there weren't the same people from my drama class. Nobody had yet warned me that the one-acts were a haven to veteran theater folks. The upperclassmen who grew facial hair and wore overalls, rode their mopeds, smoked pot, and played acoustic guitar in the parking lot. But it was too late. I was already in the room. There I saw me come in. The only thing worse than my invasion of their secret club was me running out, tail between my legs. So I sat down and calmly awaited my turn. It was a practice in Ms. B's theater program to audition before your peers. And looking back at this, I'm still searching for the pedagogical reason for such public scrutiny and humiliation. After watching most of the room audition, and damn, some of them were remarkably good, I'd run out of seniors and juniors to hide behind. Ms. B invited me to take the stage, and I did. Couldn't feel anything. All senses going. Even in that small black box, the lights could still blind you. And you knew the entire time that in the blackness, the jury was staring at you, waiting for you to crash and burn. So, my idea for the play is about this Vietnamese kid. His name is Min, and he has... no friends. And the silence was deafening. There was no stopping now. Keep going. The whole thing takes place in his head, how he's always made fun of. We see his perspective, and there's this one person who finally gets him. And then he finally makes friends and finds, family. Not really his family because he's got his parents, but, yeah, that's my idea. A beat. They're waiting for my monologue. My monologue is the Pledge of Allegiance. No joke. I put my right hand to my heart. And I enunciated every word of the pledge with conviction and pride, sans an ounce of irony. At the end, long beat followed. Then the room broke out in loud, polite applause, as if to say, kudos for the effort. I picked up my bag and left the room, avoiding any eye contact. Needless to say, I didn't make the cast. The folks that did had the opportunity to write their own one act, and from all accounts, it was a beautiful showcase. But that event didn't scar me. I continued on with Theater One, soaked up everything. The following year, I stepped up on the stage and tried out again, telling three stories in rapid-fire succession, leaving the room in stitches and me sweating. Not only did I make the cast, but it was another cast-authored show. I wrote a monologue about my father, how he got shot as a student in Vietnam. The festival was held in a hotel, and after the performance, I was riding the elevator back to my room. Riding in the elevator with me were two girls about my age, and they kept staring at me. After a couple of whispered exchanges between the two of them, they said, You performed with Woods in high school, right? I nodded, bracing myself for whatever ridicule was in store. You made us cry. The show went on to take second place that year, and I received an All-Star Cast Award. I had never gotten an award before that. Not too shabby for a fat kid who bombed his first audition. That first time around, I had pitched an idea about a lost and lonely kid. I was lucky, because it only took a year to find my family. I wanted to connect with another theater artist who I suspected might have a similar journey to mine. I met Kiki in New Orleans, a native Samoan, one badass human being. When you did, you know, like, okay, I'm going to try to do this theater thing.
Well, the high school that I went to never had a theater program. And I remember my best friend and I went to, I don't even know who drove us. He probably drove us all the way to downtown because we lived in the country. And he drove us to this audition that Honolulu Theater for Youth was having. And it was to cast a series of student-written plays. So we went, we auditioned, and we had so much fun, and we really wanted to get in, and we didn't.
Yikes. So how, was it a, like, what'd you do for the audition? Was there...
I remember playing games. I remember there was a lot of movement involved. And maybe some cold reads. And so after that, I was a little jaded. But, you know, I still wanted to do theater, even though we didn't have a program. I wanted to act. Mm-hmm. Because I felt like acting was my way out. It was my way to escape what was happening in my life. So it wasn't until I went to college and took my first theater class, and it was led by this Russian grad student who was very militant.
Oh, yikes.
Oh. But she liked me for some reason. She didn't like my friends.
They can go.
They can go, but you can stay.
That's right.
And I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll work really hard. And then I went to another audition, I remember, for a youth theater play. And again, I didn't get it. And then my friend was telling me, you just gotta keep going. Just go to auditions and have fun. And the more they see you, the more likely you'll get chosen. Mm. So I kept going. And then I finally got into a grad student's play that she was directing for her thesis. And it was about body image, and I had to undress.
Oh, wow. How did that go?
It went really well. It went really well. It made me nervous because I was super conservative at that time. And, you know, taking off your clothes. I had the most conservative underwear on, like boy shorts and a tank top. But it got the attention of the female director that I auditioned for the youth theater show. So that came out great.
Yeah. What made you stick with it? Or do you feel like right now you're like, no, actually that art form is past tense.
I really wanted to provide a space for students like myself. So for Pacific Islanders to be on stage, because there weren't any at that time. Maybe there was a, no, in the college setting, there weren't any. I was the only one. And it wasn't, yeah. And so I would always get asked. That was kind of the good thing, because I was the only one. Whenever visiting Pacific Islander artists came from New Zealand, I was always asked to do readings. And they really opened up my eyes to what could be. Because a theater is, there's it's so, it's a big thing in New Zealand. And Pacific theater is also a thing. Like, that was never a thing in Hawaii. It's not a thing still in America. And so I wanted that. I wanted to bring some of that here. So that's what made me keep, made me continue with theater. Now, is it past tense? I feel like it's getting there.
What's informing that, I guess? Are you diversifying into different media? Is that something that you're playing with, or do you feel like the actual landscape of theater is not something that
I think the actual landscape of theater is changing. And especially after this whole year where we've really had to shift and think about, okay, how do we do theater now? What is theater now in this Zoomosphere? I think it's, I mean, it's made me realize how shaky it is. And maybe that's the thing, maybe this had to happen for us to break our idea of what theater is, because theater is really Western. It's its roots are in Europe.
Theater as we know it, right?
Right, theater as we know
Yeah,
it.
yeah, yeah, yeah.
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 What's become the business of
Yes.
yeah. So you have a unique perspective. You were you're born in Hawaii and raised with that perspective of like a terrible history of really just colonization, and yet in Hawaii being among like people that do look like you, and being surrounded by like that. What's that dynamic that me on like the East Coast of continental US don't get or don't see?
So growing up in Hawaii, yeah, it's really an interesting perspective because, for example, now being here in California, and I feel like I've moved to a different country. Because in Hawaii, you're being taught, well, it depends on where you're being taught and who's teaching you. So I was taught in high school about the real history of Hawaii. And that became part of me, the psychology of not being an American became part of me. Also, I grew up as a Jehovah's Witness, so that further instilled that idea of, no, I'm not part of this world. Yeah, so it's even more different.
How much of that do you would you say that you still carry that, like, or do you feel like some of that you've, I like, how do you still hold tight to that message, that messaging, or those beliefs?
Of not being an American? I do. I do. It is still very much a part of me because I come from Hawaii. Religiously, not so much. But it's still ingrained. It's like deep in the recesses of my brain where I really don't even feel human sometimes.
Amazing.
Like there's this other spiritual realm that I belong to.
And I saw your recent post of yours talking about pride and where you were raised, pride in like your particular section or neighborhood of the island. Can you talk more about that? I don't, because really, for folks like me, we just see Hawaii as a network of islands. We don't know the difference. We don't know apart from what we see in media. And so what's you were describing the reputation of that area.
Yeah, so I grew up in Waianae. That is on the west side of the island. So in Hawaii, the island traditionally is separated into these districts and then districts within the districts. So where I grew up is Lualualea in the district, in the bigger district of Waianae. And that entire district has a really bad reputation for, gosh, too long. And it's been the dumping ground of the island, literal dumping ground. Like they dump their wastes
Oh, yikes.
in our neighborhoods. They've developed, what do you call, landfills for like construction landfills in our neighborhood in Lualualea. Academically, we were always at the lowest. They always focus on crime rates, drugs, homelessness. So anything coming from Waianae, people are always afraid of, like, ooh, how did you survive Waianae? Because they always feel like they're going to get their asses kicked. And you know what? People from our side, we're okay with that reputation most of the time because it keeps outsiders outside. Because we know that Waianae is not that. Waianae is actually a really beautiful place. It's magical. The people, the community really comes together, and we know we don't rely on the state. We don't rely on anybody from the outside. We rely on each other, to take care of each other. Like during this whole pandemic, everyone's been getting their there's been food distributions, and the community health center's been just working overtime. We've always taken care of ourselves.
What inspired you to move?
To move to California? Maybe it was in 2011. I was working full time for this community health center, and that's my whole life was just work. And then I decided, you know what? I'm gonna drop this work, and I'm gonna move to the Big Island with my best friends. So I did, and when I got there, it really changed my life. Like then. The island itself is so alive. You can feel it breathing almost. And that put a lot of things into perspective. And from that move, I decided that from now on, I'm just gonna follow my na'au, which is my intuition. I'm gonna live through following my intuition. And my intuition told me to move to California, so I did. That's the long story short. I'm very picky about who I work with now. And being an independent artist, I feel like I have that. I can choose who I'm going to work with. I wasn't part of an institution. I didn't have to quit my job because I was just working gig to gig. I still am. And I found a theater company that I believe in that does the work that is supposed to be done. That we feel is supposed to be done, of course. Yeah, here in LA. And they are both, the founders are Leilani and Ova. They're from Hawaii originally, and they're based out in Santa Monica. And so I've been working with them the past year. Even though we haven't been doing shows, we've been doing a lot of community engagement and a lot of community conversations. I got to do a fellowship with them where I worked with the program for torture victims. So refugees that have come to California, based in California, and helping them tell their story. And
That's a lot of experience, life experience to invite into yours.
it's huge. Gosh, it's really humbling
Yeah.
to work on that level with that community. But it's made me realize like that's the kind of work I want to do. That's the theater I want to see and be a part of. I do love theater. It is part of my life. And it looks like this. It no longer looks like what it used to.
Yeah, I get that 100%. You talk about food being your love language.
It
We've
is.
connected several points on Instagram because of each other's posts and what we share. What food do you does makes you like just explode with joy?
Oh man, so much food. Food with complex flavors. Food where you can really taste the story. You know, I love Vietnamese food. And I feel like the better the food, the better the story. So my friend Michelle, who I always tell you about, whose mom has a restaurant in Hawaii. This lady can cook anything. Anything. And she really changed the Vietnamese food game for me. I no longer only order pho. Because everything else on the menu is so delicious.
So you're just like, you either point or you just give me whatever. Yeah, because you like even the funky stuff, because I think I posted something, a bunrio or something like that, and
Oh, yes.
you're like, I love that stuff. I was like, what?
Is that considered funky stuff?
It's definitely not like, well, like you said, the typical order is pho or
That's true.
banh mi or something like that. And so something that's way off the beaten track is like, who do you know? But I love that. Like, I love that who do you know moment, because it's like a sign of you recognize something that's so deep in the culture that's unique. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I love it. I would love to go to Vietnam just to eat.
For sure. For sure. That's a huge draw for me too. I've
Oh,
never been.
good.
I've never been.
We gotta take a trip. We gotta go eat.
Gotta go eat. Here we go. We'll meet there.
They call it Little Saigon here in
Yes.
LA. Have you been?
Well, I've been to the one in Santa Ana, which is not little at all. It's pretty big. But in LA, I don't
That's what I'm
know.
saying.
Oh, yeah.
So, it's like in Orange County.
Yes.
It's huge, right?
What'd
I've renamed it.
you name it?
Saigon City, USA.
Oh, yeah, that's about right. That's about right.
There's nothing little about it.
I'll tell you, and this, especially with post art equity lens, I saw like a integration into America that I didn't quite expect, and that I find that interesting, thinking about now, that was something that I was ignorant of.
You know what? Okay, so when I went to New Zealand for the first time in 2016, I brought my play there. That was the first time I was ever surrounded by so many Pacific Islanders. And they were everywhere and in the arts. And they were artists. They were practicing artists, working artists. And I went into this small town. Well, I thought it was a small town. It looked like Kalihi on Oahu, which is another place where people are known as, it's known as a ghetto. There's a lot of low-income housing. That's where a lot of immigrants go to. And so it reminded me of Kalihi. But there is a gallery, there's an art gallery there. And it was all Pacific artists on the walls and in the space. And I was just tripping out. And then my friend took me to a market. And there are all these Pacific Islanders, like from like Cook Islanders, Samoans, Tongans. And that was mind-blowing for me. I think that must have been part of, you know, a similar experience.
Yeah.
And every time I go there now, it's like that.
Yeah.
It blows my mind. Because it's just islanders of all the Moana, of all the ocean, coming together in this happy space. I mean, they have their own politics, you know. But from the outside, from my lens, it was paradise.
Incredible.
To be surrounded by so many other people.
Yeah, for sure. And did you feel like they embraced you as one of them?
Yes. I always feel related. They call me, you're like my cousin Kiki.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes, I am.
You are so much love because you didn't have to show me so much grace. And so I appreciate that very much. Oh.
I can't pass this opportunity up.
We'll do this again and I'll buy you takeout.
For sure. All right. Okay. For sure. Okay.
Love you, friend.
I love you.